she's told me off a few times. I got me. Anybody use Pound World? Fantastic. I've got million. Poundland, Pound World. Never use them, don't you? Specs. I've got thousands of them. Can't tell you. Do you do that? Do you do that when you go in the shop? She was. My missus has been telling me off this afternoon. So don't tell them the jokes. Don't tell them the jokes. Unfortunately, she's not here. I'm not very good at jokes, actually, because I keep forgetting stuff. Which reminds me of a story. There was a bishop, and he was rubbish at jokes. He was rubbish at jokes. Anyway, he had a talk. I do a talk to a woman's institute. So he went to his curate, says, I'm rubbish at jokes, and I've got to start off with a joke. It's tradition. Curate said, don't worry. He says, I've got a great joke for you. He says, look, what you need to say is this. He says, look, the best years of my life were spent in the arms of another man's wife. And then just pause. And say, it was my mother. And they'll all laugh. And then he says, all right, great. So he gets there, gets out, goes to the Women's Institute. There's 200 women there with their knitting or whatever they do at the Women's Institute. All out there. And he goes, oh, thank you very much for coming. Says, I just want you to know. He says, do you know, the best years of my life were spent in the arms of another man's wife. For the life of me, I can't remember who she was. And that's how my jokes go, unfortunately, guys. Just before we came out, I was with Paul and Caroline, and we were Googling stuff. And I've got to show you this. It was great. It wasn't intended to talk about this, but I've got an Urban Dictionary, Ian. We're just looking at stuff. Top definition for Ian, which is code for a hot guy. Urban Dictionary, look it up. I'm not lying to you. I'm a Christian. Okay. Cannot be used in the case of females. So, for example, oh, my God, Emma, there's an Ian at 3 o'clock. No way. I'm just saying. Hot guy. Urban Dictionary, guys, look it up. Look it up. She knows a hot guy when she sees one. Right. She told me not to share this, so I will, as you do. And unfortunately, it's about the SEX word. So you guys that aren't married, this is from the Daily Mail, by the way, the Daily Mail. So you guys that aren't married, just close your eyes, ears, sorry. So in the Daily Mail, it said this, having more sex makes men more likely to believe in God. Well, it is a miracle for some of them. New research suggests sex inspires spirituality and even religious beliefs. According to the Duke University study in America, it's down to oxytocin. Is that a real thing, is it? Yeah. Oxytocin. The love hormone is released during sex, childbirth, and breastfeeding. Researchers claimed having sex inspires spirituality and even belief in God. According to the research, sex releases a love hormone, oxytocin, not only promotes social bonding, altruism, and also divinity, especially in men. Researchers at Duke University in North Carolina say that sex could inspire a belief or increase belief in God and religion. The study published this week look at oxytocin hormone, which is often stimulated during sex, childbirth, and breastfeeding. So, guys, you want to go home tonight, you married guys, and say, I've had a great talk, and I want to become more religious. And I can print that off for you if you want. Right, I don't want to keep you too long. I said to Matt that I'd be about half an hour, but, you know, you've heard it all before, so hopefully I won't keep you that long. And he said, just kind of give you a bit of background about me, and I heard Neil's background this morning is fantastic. It was absolutely incredible. I loved your talk this morning, Neil. Absolutely brilliant. So, my kind of background, I come from Milton Keynes, but actually I'm originally born in Hinckley, commonly affectionately known to me as Stinkley. And, you know, I was born and brought up in the same council house there. And when I was 16, my parents said, get out to work. You can't carry on with your education. So I used to go out knocking on doors trying to find some work. And I was a bit of a lad, I think the word is, a bit of a lad. I used to be a bit of a roughy tufty. I used to box. I boxed for England a few times. I had the privilege of doing that. Took me around the world. I boxed in the ABA finals. Unfortunately, the guy in the other corner was called Nigel Benn. And when you give him the two best shots you've ever done and he didn't even notice, you think, I've got to survive now. Drastically. I did a form of martial arts called Wadok Lung Gung Fu, which is, I'm a black belt in that, which is street fighting, basically. And I used that to many effects when I was younger. And I've also got involved with the is any travellers here in the travelling community? There were good guys, but some of the ones I got involved with weren't so good. And I've done one or two bare knuckle fights, very good money with them. And also, and I used to do my house up, and I used to get a phone call from the boxing guys, and they used to, next door used to have the phone, and they used to ring me up and say, you've got a fight tonight, De Montfort Halls or Granby Halls or whatever, we'll give you 150 quid. And I used to go to the end of the road, have a fight, come back at 2 a.m. and go to work. And that was kind of, and I used to go on about, and I used to do stuff for money that probably wasn't very savoury, to say the least. And I don't want to go too much, because the past is the past, guys, isn't it? The past is the past. But that's how I lived. You know, by the time I was 19, both my brothers and my sister were dead, and I said, come on, bring it on. This is more and more for me. You know, live by the sword, die by the sword. That was my motto. And I think probably I would have died by the sword. You know, when I went out at night, I used to have guys that walked me home. People used to come to challenge me because I had a bit of a name. And I've got a few scars on my body to do that. Unfortunately, boxing used to inject me with cortisone as well. So I've had a few operations on my back. I've got 2 metal lips and partial filling in my arm. But I used to be invincible. I used to be invincible. And actually, the good old travelling, you know, they can look after themselves, the travellers, can't they? I wasn't bright. They said to me, we've got this guy, we need you to do a number on him, and we're going to pay you. And I went, okay. So I went to this well-known pub, Irish pub, and the guy, I won't mention the guy's name, anyway, he came out. He came towards the doors, and I gave him a beating. I mean, I gave him a beating. My knuckles were red raw. In fact, they were swollen up. I gave him a proper beating. The landlord came to me, and he said, I've got to keep you in the pub. I've got to keep you in the pub. I've got to keep you in the pub. This guy came back with a handgun. He was, I don't know what they're called. You'll know this, Neil. It was a guy that got the armoury for the IRA. He got all the armoury bits for him. So the gypsies were very clever. So I thought I was going to die that night. But fortunately, the landlord said, I can't really have this. It's because they use this for different things. And if the police get involved. So I had to stay in the pub till about 4 a.m. until this guy went. And then I had to go and apologize. I had to find him. And I had to apologize him to him. And I took a beating. So that's a little bit about me and my background. But that was my identity. You know, people like me because what I could do. And I can't believe it because I'm a good looking guy as well. I've got a nose that's massive and it doesn't work. But you know, that was me. That was my identity. And you know, strange enough, God's got a weird old way, you know. He ambushed me one day. I'm 28 years of age. I've got this Bible I stole from school 14 years ago. Why would you steal a Bible? Because it's there, I'll steal it. You do. So I picked the Bible up, and I opened it up at the back book. And you'd know it as a book of Revelation. This said the book of Apocalypse. I never read the Bible. And I read, and it just blew me apart. And I'm going to find it really hard to explain to you guys. But you know, you probably feel this, how you felt, you know, this experience of God. And it blew me apart. Because, I don't know, but you ever watch that movie, Ghost, you know, my darling, with the Potter. And it does that. And I've always had this thing about, you've never got anything kind of to rest on what's the truth. So I kind of, you know, those guys think, well, I'll be all right. My name's not Adolf Hitler. And in the end, I'll go away to wherever it is when I die. And it'll be fine. You know, because that's what I thought. You know, and the bad guy in that film, he went away to the bad places, but the good guy, he was okay, because he was all right guy like me, really. And so I read this, and it first thing that struck me was that there was a God. It struck me that he was a person. It struck me that he wasn't some force that was a million miles away. He was an actual person. And I cannot explain to you how that felt. This was, it was like that close, he felt that close to me. You know, at the time, I didn't know what the heck was going on. Now I know it's a thing called the Holy Spirit. That close. But then, it just blew me apart, because it said, you've done things wrong, son. You've done things wrong. And you know what's going to happen. And I must have sobbed for an hour. sobbed for an hour because the old fairyland didn't exist. And this person told me that I was doomed. As I read it, it gave me the solution. And it was just life-changing. It changed my life instantly. Believe it or not, I was foul-mouthed and not a very nice guy. And I instant change. Changed me overnight. This relationship I had, I could not explain. I'd never stepped in front of a church before. In fact, I'd go out the weekend, so, you know, sometimes on a Friday night after work, I'd go in the pub, and we'd gamble. And then if there's anybody drunk, I'd beat them up and take the money off them and carry on gambling. And then I'd come out on a Sunday night, go back home, go to work. That's my life, things like that. So on a Sunday morning when I walked home, I go past the church, and you see the greeters outside with the suits on welcoming everybody. I thought they were bouncers to keep people like me out. You know, you do these things, guys, you don't realise when you're somebody from a different world. I'm thinking, I don't want people like me in here. They've got the bouncers on the door. You know, so I was like, what's this all about? What's this all about? So I used to trundle along to this little Christian bookshop. I used to buy all these things reading about Christianity. I'm thinking, there's a God and there's Jesus and he's died for me and I understand it and it's fantastic, but what do I do? And eventually I found this thing. It was called Contact Christ. Actually, before that, funny enough, before that, my company said to me, so I was working for Pirelli then, I love this, guys. That's my identity. Owner of Just Tie. Who the heck are they? I'll tell you about them in a minute. That's not my identity, is it? That's not my identity. It's not my identity. And it's not your identity if you know Jesus. It's not your identity. Being a big, roughy, tufty boy and saying, oh, good job, it's not your identity, is it? So the company said to me, we want to move you. It's great. So anyway, God said to me, before they said that, you're going to have to move and you're going to find people that love you, love me like you love me, because you've got to get out of all this mess. And you will find people that love you. Within 2 weeks, my company said, I want you to move. I thought, whoa, this is weird. So anyway, I moved. I wrote this letter, Contact Christ. You know, this is what happened to me. I ain't got a clue what's going on, blah, blah, blah. And my daughter was really ill. I'm a religious guy, by the way. I've got 4 kids. My daughter was really ill. And she ended up in Stoke Mandeville Hospital having a lumbar puncture. And we had to stay in with her. And there was a guy with his wife come to visit somebody else next to us. And he was talking about his church. And I thought, the church I want to go to. It sounded fantastic. You know, they met together, had a good time, they had meals and things like that. They had men's meetings. And I thought, wow, that's just amazing. So I wrote this letter anyway, sent it off. About a week later, I had a phone call. Hello, I've been passed this letter on to you. Can I come see you? I said, yeah, no problem. Said, yeah, yeah, great, great. I'll come next week. Next week comes along. Knock on the door, open the door. It's the guy that was sitting next to me in the hospital. I thought, that's strange, isn't it? What a coincidence. And he took me along, held my hand for about 4 weeks to the church. Because when I walked in, I ain't got a clue what the heck you were saying. You spoke some strange language, guys. You know, and then I gradually got used to the language and people started doing all this stuff and, you know. But it took 4 weeks and bless him. He was an elder in the church. Chris, maybe. Had 4 daughters. Had a meal with him every week. You know? That's faithfulness, isn't it? Faithfulness. Faithfulness. Him and another guy, for a year and a half, walked me through the Bible. Walked me through the Bible. And I ate it up. I ate that Bible up. Till I knew it back to front. Till I knew it back to front. You know? And it's that. What I did is I stopped and I listened. I stopped and I listened. It's one of my favourite verses in the Bible, actually. It's from Samuel. It says this, like water spilled on the ground, which cannot be recovered, so he must die. But that is not what God desires. Rather, he devises ways that a banished person does not remain banished from him. He's finding different ways, isn't he? Constantly finding different ways, and we've got to stop and listen. What he did with me, because I'm a bit thick and a bit punchy, he grabbed me by the collar and went, but he can speak quietly to you. He can speak loudly to you. But what I want to say to you is, you've got to stop and listen. You've got to stop and listen. You know, my life changed from that, and it went in a different direction. You know, just tires. We sold it once. We had built it up. 93 centres, a manufacturing business, a fleet business, a wholesale business, over £100 million business we had. Sold it. Kate stayed on as a chief exec, and they bust it, bless them. So I bought some of them back. I've got 39, 40 of them now, spread around a bit. And then I've got an internet site called Value Tires, which has got 900 franchisees on it. And if you look on the BBC, I did a programme for a BBC Working Lunch, it was called, and I did a couple of programmes, and they use it for the A-level business studies now. So you put my name in, and you'll see me in different hairstyles, buying the business and doing it. But that ain't my identity, guys. It ain't my identity. And it, you know, I just think now, when that was going through a crash and I was having to manage it, it didn't bother me. And the people that came up to me, who worked with me, said, what is it? Why are you so? It gave me the opportunity to say, that ain't my identity. I'm a son of God. He loves me. God, I don't know if you know it, especially you young guys, God is a nice guy. And he likes you. And that, I find that, sometimes you can find that hard, can't you? He likes you. You know, he's my dad. I find, you know, sometimes you find it hard with dad, because my dad went to the pub 7 days a week, and then he was violent when he came back. So sometimes you can have to get over that, don't you? Yeah. But this dad's perfect. And I grasped it just like that. He likes me. He likes me. You know, it's just amazing. Can I say it again? He likes me. And he's known what I've done. He knows what you've done, doesn't he? And he likes you. And you've got to really grasp that, guys. You've got to grasp it. He likes you. And he finds ways of trying to get to you, doesn't he? He wants to know you. I'll tell you what, I love him. He's just fantastic. You know, he's just the best thing that's ever happened to me. I've got something here. Can I put my £1 glasses on a minute? Thank you. This man's sold £100 million business. He's got £1 glasses. What the heck is going on? You know, he's written us a love letter, isn't he? It's called the Bible. You know, we've got to read it. And we've got to get people to read it. And if you don't read it, you need to start reading it, guys, honestly. You've got to start reading it. It's brilliant. But you've got to stop. You've got to look and you've got to listen. You got that little picture I gave you? The bloke in the... yes, him. So, Washington Post. On a cold January morning in 2007 at Washington, D.C., Underground Station... My wife lived there for 3 years. She hates the Americans now. This man with a violin played 6 Bach pieces for 45 minutes. Approximately 2,000 people went through the station, most of them on their way to work. After about 3 minutes, a middle-aged man noticed that there was a musician playing. He slowed his pace, stopped for a few seconds, and then he hurried on to meet his schedule. About 4 minutes later, the violinist received his first dollar. A woman threw money in the hat and without stopping continued to walk. At 6 minutes, a young man leaned against the wall to listen to him, then looked at his watch and started to walk again. At 10 minutes, a 3-year-old boy stopped, but his mother tugged him along hurriedly. The kid stopped to look at the violinist again, but the mother pushed hard and the child continued to walk, turning his head the whole time. The action was repeated by several other children, but every parent, without exception, forced their children to move on quickly. At 45 minutes, the musician played continuously. Only 6 people stopped and listened for a short while. About 20 gave money but continued to walk at a normal pace. The man collected a total of $32. After an hour, he finished playing and silence took over. No one noticed, no one applauded. There was no recognition at all. That's him there. No one knew this, but the violinist was Joshua Bell, one of the greatest musicians in the world. He played one of the most intricate pieces ever written, with a violin worth $3.5 million. 2 days before, Joshua Bell sold out a theatre in Boston, where the seats averaged $100 each to listen to him play the same music. It's a true story. Joshua Bell playing incognito at DC Underground Station was organised by Washington Post as part of a social experiment about perception, taste, and people's priorities. What's your priority? The experiment raised a number of questions, most notably, if you do not have a moment to stop and listen to one of the best musicians in the world playing some of the finest music ever written, one of the most beautiful instruments ever made, how many other things are you rushing through life? Zephaniah said this, the Lord your God is with you, the mighty warrior who saves. He will take great delight in you. In his love, he will no longer rebuke you, but will rejoice over you with singing. The author of the universe is singing over you. The author of the universe is singing over you. How busy are you? Are you rushing by him? Are you busy doing what you're doing? Are you busy being religious? Are you busy making a living and not stopping? The author of the universe is singing over you. And he wants a relationship. And a relationship has to be two-way. And he looks, like it says in Samuel, he's looking for ways. Whether you know him or whether you don't know him, he's looking for ways for you to know him better. And that's up to us guys, isn't it? He sent us a love letter called the Bible. And we can talk to him. That fancy name called prayer is just talking to him. How do you build a relationship? How do you build a relationship? You talk. Or you use the text, as you boys do more. Snapchat. It's Snapchat and text. It's the Bible. So he's waiting for you to just, isn't he? And he wants to build a relationship with you. That's what he's looking for. The trouble is, you see, sometimes, I don't know about you, but you can have this front, like my parents. I had to do what I did. Because when you're a child, it's like this guy was saying here, the children stopped. When you're a child, Jesus said, come to me as a child. Because when you're a child, you learn to talk, you learn to walk, and you had no fear, and you did what you did. When you grow up, you get fear, don't you? And you learn to put your mask on, and you learn to become that little plastic person that's not really you. And we all do it. What God's saying is, I know who you really are. There's a thing here, a guy called Sonny Barley wrote this. Although I've got infinitely better over the years, occasionally the fear of failure that was instilled into me by my mother rears its head. Consequently, I immerse myself in busyness. Lie to myself that that what I'm doing matters most and get stuck on someday aisle. The benefit of being on someday aisle is that I can always say that I haven't failed at something I care deeply about. Everyone on someday aisle is an honorary member of the biggest club in the world, the If Only Club. And the most commonly used words on someday aisle are shoulda, woulda, coulda. Everyone on someday aisle has an alibi for hiding their genius, not living their best life. Thankfully, I've realized that the worst thing you can buy is an alibi for not listening to and acting upon the whispers of your soul. Once you're true to yourself and live your truth, life has a funny way of lining up to support you. Every thought, every decision, every moment is a choice between love and fear. Choose fear and life stagnates and becomes hellish. Choose love and our time on earth becomes heavenly. The choice is yours. We're not on a journey, guys. We're not on a journey. Everybody thinks it's on a journey. It's now. Because a journey is, you know, you hear all these people. My friend Paul just retired. You know, we all go towards that retirement bit, don't we? And we think, that's it. It's funny, actually, a friend of mine, he worked for BT. And he said, you know the amount of people that we plan on for our, he's in charge of the pensions, for our pension to work, within 6 months of people retiring in BT, the massive amount die. It's the mind telling the body, I've reached my goal. I'm on a journey. You're not on a journey, guy. You're in, guys, you, now. You're in the now. God is waiting for you now. God wants a relationship now. If you don't know him, you need to start saying, I want to find out. If you don't know him, you need to be saying, show me, God. I'm open. I want to see it. I want to see you. And he will not disappoint. If you do know him, you need to start that relationship. Busyness sometimes masks, because you're a bit frightened, the mask may fall down. That thing that you've been put in front of you, busyness, it's just an excuse, guys. You must stop. Let the creator of the universe take control. And he will not disappoint. He will not disappoint you. It says on this same report with the Washington Post, you said carpe diem. Whilst the phrase carpe diem is a useful reminder of to live each day fully, it's not very practical as we can't actually seize the day. What we can seize, however, is the moment. Life is a series of moments, and it's quality of each moment which determines the quality of our lives. The revered psychologist Abraham Maslow said that each moment presents an opportunity where we can either step forward into growth or back into safety. God is asking us to step forward and don't be afraid. Take time with him and do it. Whatever you decide to do each moment, once it's gone forever. Sometimes you can put things off. But once it's gone forever. Now is the time. Now is the time to either say, yes, I want that relationship. Or yes, I want more of that relationship. That's what he's asking for. You know, for me, it's just the most amazing thing I've ever done. It changed my life. Changed my life. You know, and I think there's an advantage in the way. I just listened to Neil this morning and said, listen to his great sermon. We have a little bit of advantage, me and him, because we didn't have what we've got now before. So we step into it and go, wow! For you guys that maybe have been brought up in the Christian faith, sometimes you think to yourselves, I've not had that. That's, you know, you've got something special. You've got something special. But what you've got to be careful of is you don't let that just drift away and go into the mundane and just go into the everyday special with God. He wants that relationship with you. Yeah. Yeah. We're gonna have a little go later on. I've got 2 meter lips and I've had my back done, by the way, Neil. I used to be right new, so I just did that, but I just want to finish that, but I'll tell you, I was terrible at school as well. I remember once I'd, there's a coach driver, I ended up having this argument, and it's a big lad, and I was just a schoolboy. He battered me. And I thought, I'm not having this. I had another go, and he battered me again. I was a right nuisance, I tell you. Had another go. After about the fourth go, he locked himself in the coach. So he's locked in this coach, and I'm going, and I've got blood over me and everything like that. I was a proper nuisance, you know. But that's how you got to be. You got to be persistent. And I'm like that now. We God, I'm persistent. You've got to be persistent. I want more of you, Lord, because you're the best thing that ever happened to me. He's the best thing that ever happened to you. Because he can be. He can be, guys. It's whether you want that or not. It's whether you want it. I've missed loads out, but I don't care. Because I just wamble on. And I'm punchy. That's it. But I'll just finish, you know, it is up to you. God's a gentleman. He's a gentleman. He will do nothing that you don't want. And you may have given your life to him already, or you may be thinking, is that for me? But he's waiting. Wherever, what stage you're at, he's waiting for you. And he wants that relationship to build and build. But it is a two-way thing, guys. You know, he wants that. He's passionate for you. Yeah. Can I just say again, he likes you. Yeah. And he's a good guy. He likes you. Yeah. That's amazing, isn't it?